it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Goodman, and you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome to the Cut to the Race podcast, the show where we bring you incredible interviews, race reviews, and the latest news in F1. I'm your host, Ollie, and today with me, James is back! How are you, mate?
I'm all right. Bit tired. But I'm all right.
How's being a dad? What's it like?
Clearly a superhero. It's going pretty well so far. It's very new. I've not had any like young babies in my family or like amongst my friends, so it's very new. But yeah, it's unique, isn't it?
Unique's one word, I would imagine. But it's lovely to have you back, mate. You've been sorely missed on this show. Sam, how are you?
I was fine until about 5 minutes before we started recording. You said my ear looked like a Percy Pig. But yeah. Other than that, I'm fine. How are you?
It still does, the way you've got your headphones on. I'm good, thank you, mate.
I'd like to be able to hear the ambient noise around me as well as...
One on, one off. Yes.
Yes.
And Abby, who has both of her ears on, her headphones on, rather. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And it is good to have James back. And hopefully he can help you guys in the quiz. And I'm glad all four of us are here.
I'm sure if anyone can help us, it will be James. So we've already done the Sprint Saturday review. So we'll just forget that ever happened. If you want to know what we thought of that, listen to the last episode. We're going to talk about everything apart from the Sprint. So let's start with our weekend ratings. James, as you're back, you get to go first on everything today. How would you rate the Austrian Grand Prix minus the Sprint?
Well, I'm hoping that the McKenzie system hasn't been totally abandoned in my absence. But using 5 as an average, it's difficult, isn't it? Because there was quite a lot of action throughout the field, but it's marred by the fact that it was another just very clear Max win from pretty early on, and the kind of debacle throughout that we will get to later with track limits. So all things balanced, I'm going to say that evens out at a 5. Bang in the middle.
Well, that's lower than I thought it was going to be, if I'm completely honest with you. I thought being this your return episode, you're going to be really excited. Oh, wow, man, it was a 10. Clearly not. Sam, what about you?
Again, using the McKenzie scale, I'm going to give it a 6.5. I thought it was all right, but previous Austrian Grand Prix or Grands Prix or Grand Prix, whatever the plural is, have... burned brighter. Abby, it looks so sick of me. She did when I was like, oh.
I had something in my eye.
It was like the Picard meme. It was exactly that.
I had something in my eye. Yeah, right. Yeah.
This guy. 6.5. I actually thought it was a pretty decent race, all things considered. It certainly wasn't the worst one we've had this season. So, yeah, I was fairly, you know, satisfied with it.
Good, glad to hear. And Abby, what did you think of it?
Well, see, now I feel really harsh because I've rated it 4.5. Because whilst there were some on-track battles and we did see Leclerc battling Verstappen for the lead at one point, for me, it was a bit chaotic and not a shambles, but it was a bit of a mess because, as you guys have said, with the track limits, you had all these different penalties coming in. Everything seemed a bit up in the air. I mean, even the commentators were getting drivers confused as to who was where and who was who on teammates, and that made me even more confused. So I've rated it 4.5.
Yeah, commentary-wise, that first lap was a bit of a mess.
It really was.
It wasn't particularly clear. But then when you see the replay, yeah, I kind of get how that happened. Mm. But I think, yeah, I would have rated it higher had the track limits thing not been as pronounced. That was messy. And actually, I think I undersold that slightly in my rating. That was not swell.
That's cost probably 1 to 2 points for me.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with a 5. I'm going to go down the middle on the McKenzie scale. It was neither good nor bad. And what really bothered me, and to be negative Nancy here, it was the position, well, the results changing after the race. That is one thing that we know I can't stand, and it happened yet again. And there was no excuse for it happening yet again. So it is a straight down the middle. Whatever good was done, it was brought back by the results changing afterwards.
I had no idea that the results had changed until the next morning. Okay, again, quite busy, but that's ridiculous. Like, that shouldn't be the case. I watched the after show coverage, and they, like, at that point, no one even knew. It wasn't mentioned, I don't think.
Well, I think by that point, they knew that Aston Martin had lodged processed, and then a while after
they didn't
after
know
that,
what about. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It was all a bit vague, and they were like, well, it must obviously be something to do with the results. So it was very much like, this is provisional, but again, that still isn't necessarily good enough. It just is, it's too messy, and it makes the sport look a little bit amateur at times when there's confusion.
It does. In such a way. I go back to my other point of, what other sport do they change the results after the game's finished? There aren't many. Can you think of any? I challenge you. Sam's having a good think here. He thought, well, I'm going to get Ollie on this one. I can look at his face. Come on, one.
Come back to me in like 5 to 10 minutes.
Days, you mean, yeah.
Give me 5 to 7 business days.
All right, well, we're going to talk about the race and everything that happened in just a bit. But before we do... So it is that time of the week where we do the world-famous Formula Nerds quiz, and Abby's back in the hot seat. So what's the quiz today, and what are we going to get James McKenzie answering?
All the questions are to do with the Austrian Grand Prix throughout F1's history, and with James back, hopefully you should be able to get 10 out of 10. So we'll see.
No pressure.
No pressure, man.
I feel like you're doing me a real disservice to my contribution.
James, have you listened to our quizzes while you've been away?
Feeling very sensitive today.
I've tried to tune. I think I heard one, if I'm honest, been quite busy. But I did listen through to the French one out of curiosity, and you guys did better than expected.
Okay, so question one. Name the two drivers who didn't receive any track limits infringements during the 2023 Austrian Grand Prix.
Lando Norris.
George Russell.
Russell's correct.
Is it Norris not? Is it Fernando Alonso?
No. Did Max get any?
Yep, he did.
Yeah, I knew George didn't. I don't know who else.
Was it Daniel Ricciardo?
No. An Alpha driver.
Joe Guanyu.
Correct. Question two. The 2022 Austrian Grand Prix weekend saw two different winners, one of the sprint race and one of the Grand Prix. Who were the two winners that weekend?
Well, Leclerc was one of them.
And was the sprint race last year?
Shows how well Sam runs it. Yes, he did. Yeah. And Leclerc won the Grand Prix. Question three. How many laps were deleted across the whole of the 2023 Austrian Grand Prix? So just Ollie. During the race.
Well, I know that 1,200 were looked at.
You should also know, because I told you just before
I know you
started
did,
recording.
I can't remember now. 700.
No.
Oh, how many laps were deleted?
Yeah.
I think it was about 70, wasn't it?
Kind of. 83.
Right, kind of. Yeah, that was generous.
That's kind of not the right answer.
That's wrong.
Yeah. Okay, question 4. Out of these 4 people, for which one is Austria not a home race? Toto Wolff, Franz Tost, Günther Steiner or Helmut Marko?
Günther Steiner.
Correct.
He's Italian.
He is.
Mm. And everyone thinks he's German, don't they?
Günther Steiner is the most German name of all time.
There's a very, very Germanic town in northern Italy where he's from.
Yeah.
They speak a lot of German there.
Question 5. Which F1 driver scored their first and only win at the 1975 Austrian Grand Prix?
Michele No.
First and only win at the Austria 75.
Oh, Angelo De Silla. No.
I love these. Like a person.
I'm going to start the name, but yeah. I'm not going to finish it.
This is such a James McKenzie question if there ever was one.
Jochen Mass.
No. It was Vittorio Brambilla. Question 6. How many times have Red Bull won the Austrian Grand Prix?
Max has won it 5 now, right? Did anyone else? Did
5? Win it?
I saw that mentioned earlier. But
that's absurd.
That's probably including the Styrian. Are we including the Styrian?
I mean, it's the same track.
So?
Yeah.
So it's the same Grand Prix.
Let's just say 5.
I have it as 4. 2018, 2019, 2021 and this year's.
Yeah, and then he won it twice in 21. Yeah. Partial credit.
I'll give you that point.
Most generous quiz host.
Kind of right. Kind of wrong.
Question 7. The Austrian Grand Prix will be on the calendar until 2030, as it was announced over the weekend. But when was the first championship Austrian Grand Prix?
44 years ago.
So what year? To save me doing
1979? 1980?
No.
I mean, considering one of the questions was who won the 1975 Austrian Grand Prix, there's quite a clear flaw in that.
To be fair, yeah, I didn't tweak that.
Anyway, 1971.
Nope, 1964.
Oh, okay.
Idiot.
Question 8. How many Austrian drivers have competed in F1?
There are quite a few in the 70s, and I'd say like 10 or so.
Niki Lauda, that's one.
Yeah, Niki Lauda. Hold on. I'd say 10 or so. Pick a number around there, guys.
9.
12.
16.
Oh.
Question 9. What is the name of the airfield near the Red Bull Ring that hosted the 1963 and 1964 Austrian Grand Prix?
Wait a minute. I thought the first Austrian Grand Prix was 1964.
The first championship Austrian Grand Prix was 64.
Oh, here we go.
63 wasn't a championship one.
There's something in my head saying Zelt. Vague or something like that.
Correct. Well done. That's the correct answer.
Life, man.
James knows his airports, doesn't he?
Man loves a flag and an airport.
And final question. Who are the 2 Austrian drivers to have won an F1 World Championship?
Max Verstappen.
Niki Lauda.
Did you say Max Verstappen?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
He did.
And Jochen Rindt.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Well done.
Right. Let's see if that makes sense.
How did we do, Abby?
I believe you got 7 out of 10.
And in real scores, not Abby's scores?
6 out of 10.
Oh, so there is an upscaling.
Well, I don't want to be too harsh, you know?
You can be harsh, it's just us.
It's James's first time back. He's been very busy these past months.
Yeah,
month.
I should get battle hardened. He's, you know.
Yeah, get an extra 2 points for coming back. It's 9 out of 10.
Yeah, actually. I should get 2 exactly. points for Zeltweg, man.
You should.
Okay, and that was the end of the Formula Nerds quiz.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Let's talk about, very briefly, about practice and quali, if we can still remember what happened. Abby.
Well, given that they were Friday, it is quite difficult because you just forget that they have happened because you have the sprint and then the Grand Prix. With practice, not really a lot to note. Verstappen went fastest, which is no surprise. Ferraris were on pace, going second and third. And that was it, really. There was nothing major happening. In qualifying Q1, there was a red flag due to Bottas spinning at turn one, but he managed to get it going again and got back to the pits. The McLaren upgrades on Norris's car were looking to be strong, but it was Tsunoda, Zhou, Sargeant, Magnussen and De Vries out of the session. In Q2, track limits became a common issue. Both Red Bulls had their lap times deleted at one point, and Verstappen said that the track limit deletions were ridiculous. Perez did get into the top 10, but his lap time was deleted, which meant that he was out of Q2. So it was Russell, Ocon, Piastri, Bottas and Perez out then for Q3. Again, quite uneventful. Some lap times were deleted. Verstappen took pole. No one could get close to him. And it was Leclerc joining him on the front row, then Sainz, Norris, Hamilton, Stroll, Alonso, Hülkenberg, Gasly and Albon. And throughout the whole of qualifying, 47 lap times were deleted in total.
I mean, 47 lap times. It's verging on embarrassing, really, isn't it?
Now, one lap time for every year you've been alive, Ollie.
I think I saw somewhere that like it was 16 lap times in last year's qualifying and 47 this year. Like,
Oh, 16 last year. That's Sam's age.
Bit weird you having me on the podcast.
I'm 31, just for the listeners, not 47. I guess there's a couple of things to talk about here. First of all, one practice session. So we've seen it before this year, obviously, but I really think they're onto something. It makes everything that follows so much more exciting. Sam, what are your thoughts? Should we just stick to one practice session?
I think it's the bright part of the sprint weekend format that we're using this season. It makes it so much more critical. I don't know if I'm fully behind it full term. And I say that as someone who's always been like, look, if you're going to do something, do it. I don't like this, ooh, some races are sprint races, some aren't. I want consistency, I want uniformity. But I like what it brings to a weekend, the jeopardy. Like we saw in Baku, how it affected Alpine, and in particular Pierre Gasly. He had an absolute disaster class because he parked up with mechanical issues in practice and then put it in the wall in qualifying, and so it just kind of, you know, snowballed from there. So I really, really enjoy that factor. I guess they're going to have to find a way to make the weekend not as compromised, though, because you're cutting out 2 hours of the schedule potentially if you didn't have the sprint quali and sprint race.
Now, James, I know you're quite opinionated on the whole one session, then going into a qualifying for something 2 days later or a day later. How did you think it worked this time? Did you think it worked successfully? But again, we'd all forgotten what happened on Friday, right?
Yeah, and that was my main point last time, and I think it still remains true that the organic crescendo over the weekend that normally exists of it, you know, each session ramping up in importance disappears and it ends up a bit jumbled and you can't really remember, and it's like, oh, which quali did that happen in? And yeah, okay, it's not that important in the grand scheme of things, but it's just, yeah, I don't know. I just don't think it adds more than it takes away overall.
Oh, I'm fully with you on the format as a whole, in totality, across the weekend. But the 1 hour practice session is the most enjoyable difference for me.
It's, yeah, that definitely, yeah, it's riding that line of kind of producing a bit of a lottery without going full Bernie sprinklers, isn't it? Like, it's kind of finding organic ways to make it a bit more mixed up, potentially.
And to use F2 and F3 as an example, because it is a good use case here, because they have 45 minutes of practice ahead of a half an hour qualifying session later that day. And we've talked about this enough over the season because of George Russell's comments earlier in the year. But take Victor Martins, for example. He has said in the past how important he finds nailing practice. And if he almost fell pretty consistently, Abby will attest to this, if he is in the top two or three or top in practice, you can bet he's probably going to have a good qualifying session. And last year, that set him up pretty well he won the F3 championship, and he hasn't had as good a season in F2 as he should do pace-wise. He's made a couple of mistakes, but he is always there or thereabouts if he nails practice. So it makes it critical. It exemplifies why that format works.
Most definitely, the feeder series do really show the impact of how a one practice session can then have a domino effect kind of across the whole of the weekend. It does make it more exciting, but like James said, it does take away from the crescendo of the weekend, because it's like, okay, you've got qualifying. Oh, wait, now you've got another qualifying. Okay, now you've got a race. Okay, now you've got an even longer race. And I was getting confused as to which qualifying Perez actually went out in Q2 in, and then I only realised, again, once we'd done the previous podcast episode. So it's confusing. There is more to go, but it was better this weekend than Baku, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Abby, you're absolutely right. And we are people who live, breathe, talk, write about F1. And we're still scratching our heads. Hang on, I thought Perez was, on Saturday, we're thinking, oh, I thought Perez was out, in Q2. But, he's there. It is a little bit messy. But let's talk about Perez out in Q2 for qualifying. Yes, we know he recovered, but again, it wasn't looking good for Perez this weekend, was it? And some say, oh, it was an amazing comeback drive. He shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, go on, James. More to say than me.
I mean, there isn't that much more to say, to be fair. Like, yeah, the fact that what I was thinking then was the fact that he keeps popping up on the preliminary results of Driver of the Day. And when he was there with Lando, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, stop giving him Driver of the Day for recovering in clearly the best car in the field, by a margin, which he's absolutely had a shocker in qualifying, and then got it back to, probably the least that you could expect. This was better. At least he got it onto the podium, but he needed a bit of help along the way. And I think he probably had the better strategy as well. But yeah, it's interesting because everyone's like, oh, it's the pressure. It's the pressure getting to him when he was making these mistakes initially. But there couldn't be less pressure on him now in terms of a championship battle, because, everyone knows that's done.
Yeah, and you can look at the weekend and go, side 15th. So, 15 points, that's, a good haul in terms of the actual race, obviously discounting the sprint Saturday element of it. But realistically, let's face it, we can't kid around here. It's 3 points lost. He should have and would have finished in second. And he didn't, because he, again, for the fourth weekend in a row, didn't execute properly in qualifying.
I'm really glad it's not just me, Sam, who thinks this, because I thought, am I being a bit harsh when I was watching everyone go, oh, Perez, oh, he's back, oh, he's recovered, he's shown what he's about again. I'm like, no, he hasn't.
The Red Bull is that good this year that P2 is the bare minimum.
Yeah.
It might sound direct, but that is a reality of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, people gave Bottas so much stick in his time at Mercedes. Dude never missed Q3, not once.
Yeah, I feel bad about that in hindsight.
People gave Bottas. I said Sam.
Yeah, he read between the lines.
Okay, right. Before we get onto the race, we're going to do the well-famous National Anthem review. Okay, so it is that time of the week where we review the national anthem, and we had, I think, two to review this week, but it was a bit of a medley, so they blended in together. Before I share my views on it, James, as you're the guest, you can go first. How would you rate it? What did you think?
It was pretty epic overall. Yeah, and I was trying to figure out because, we hear the Austrian national anthem a lot these days, and to be fair, have done pretty consistently over the last 15 years. I couldn't figure out at first, so it turned out it was the Styrian as well, and the fact I can't say I know the Styrian anthem, they must have done a very good job of blending it together, because it was seamless. I thought it was very nicely put together, and to be honest, they may as well have just stuck around the side of the track to play it when Max won.
What would you rate it out of 10?
Oh, sorry, yes. 7 out of 10.
Oh, very high, very high. Okay, Abby, I'm going to go to you next.
I've rated it a 4 out of 10.
Ooh. What? Why?
Because you had the woman who was dressed nicely, but then the man singing was just in jeans and a t-shirt, so he could have put in a bit more effort.
Hang on.
I've got points, hang on. Right. The music was all right, but it was too loud that you couldn't actually hear what they were singing properly. You had helicopters flying flags,
you
know, and a flyover.
You have a volume dial on your TV, right?
Yeah, but I still couldn't hear them. And then the helicopter and that, it all seemed a bit, like, too much.
For context, this is Abby who awards us points in the quiz when we get questions wrong because she feels bad. So this must be bad in Abby's view.
Abby's broken. Also, what's wrong?
If George Russell performed the national anthem, though, we'd be on something. They'd get a higher score.
Hold on, Sam. I don't feel that she's finished yet with all the problems.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, sorry.
No, that is all I've got to say. It was a 4 out of 10 for me.
My God. I didn't see that one coming. Hell,
I don't know who's confused me more. James saying that the anthem was epic, or pretty epic, to qualify, and then a 7 out of 10, which I felt was lower than I was expecting, based on his comments, or Abby just eviscerating.
Mackenzie scale, man. Mackenzie scale. Above average.
No, but I actually really appreciate Abby's comments. Because she's thought outside the box.
It was a massive show, and then a guy was there in jeans and a t-shirt, like he'd just strolled from the grandstand.
Abby, I'm wearing a jeans and a t-shirt now. Have you got a problem with me?
No, but you had the woman in a glittery dress, and she was like done up all nicely, and you had the orchestra and everything. And
if Ollie's wife walks in now in like a proper prom dress, I'm
when we have the Formula Nerds Christmas meetup, we're going to have to dress up to the nines, I think, or it's going to kick us out.
God, next time I see Abby, I'm going to make sure I have a suit on at least.
Full tux.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh, that's really, really made my evening. Shall I go now, Ollie?
Yeah, it's over to you.
Okay. All right, well, I don't want to disagree with Abby too much because Abby is right about most things, I find.
And
but this
terrifying,
is subjective.
Frankly, today.
I love it. It's brilliant. It's direct. It's, you know, opinionated. I actually thought it was a certified banger, to be fair.
Hey!
I don't want to be overdramatic and overcook this, but it may or may not end up on my running playlist. the Styrian national anthem, or the Styrian anthem. Do we have regional anthems in the UK? Does America for states? Because this could be more of a thing.
Where do you live, Sam? The national anthem of Leatherhead? Or where do you live?
Reigate,
okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. So you don't need to apologise.
I'm British.
It's whatever music they use on Waitrose, probably, isn't it?
Yeah. There's an orchestra in itself in Waitrose, isn't there? Anyway, Sam.
I don't know what Waitrose would say about me. No, I'm joking. I shop wherever it's convenient. Not that anyone needs to know that. No, I actually really enjoyed the anthems. I thought they were well executed. I think Abby's absolutely right. There were bits that when I was watching it, I was like, that's a bit odd. But yeah, I wish Lewis Hamilton had enjoyed it a little bit more.
Oh, here we go.
Ollie, if you want to take it from here. If, I don't know if anyone's noticed the Lewis Hamilton thing.
Well, yeah, I think most of the newspapers did. He had his fingers in his ears for the entire duration of it. And yeah, people are calling him very disrespectful. I'm going to be honest. You know you're on camera, right? Why would you have your fingers in your ears for a national anthem?
For real, they're saying it's disrespectful. Like, you know, they normally all have, like, ear defenders in.
AirPods, you
mean? That's really... Well, they have some form of ear defence in. There is a plane going over their heads. It's loud. It's loud. That's why he's got it. And the child was complaining how loud it was.
James, the children in front of him, none of them had an issue with it.
James can attest children
are loud.
Well,
they probably got earplugs in.
Anyway.
I mean, yeah, but It's going to be difficult to deliver now because Abby has cheered me up so far on this podcast. But I'm me glad. And Ollie, I think, found it quite interesting when we were talking beforehand how I, you know, people were saying that, you know, Lewis Hamilton's rude for this. And I was like, I don't care. I couldn't care less. It really doesn't bother me. He is in pre-race mode. If he needs to stick his ears, his fingers in his ears to prep to keep his mind clear, then, mate, go for it. You're a professional athlete. There are more important things than, you know, a national anthem of a country. Let's not get jingoistic about it.
Let's not talk about it for 20 minutes, like, honestly.
What was I going on there? Sorry.
No, I meant you said there are more important things than national anthems, and here we are.
Oh, no. Within the context of the show, there's not. This is the best bit of the show.
So how would you rate it, Sam?
Oh, have I not rated it yet?
No. I'm just waiting for the punchline, man.
Ollie, I handed it over to you so you could give your rating without even giving mine. I'm so sorry. I think it was an
8.5. 8.5? Wow, that's high. Right, based on all the national anthems we've done over the years, this had everything that I've asked for. This, ladies and gentlemen, is my 10 out of 10 national anthem. It was a banger.
Wow.
Absolute banger.
So you have no problems with guys in, like, shorts and a T-shirt then?
No. Ollie likes the guys with more skin.
No, I thought it was brilliant. It was like a movie soundtrack. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. No bones to pick with it whatsoever.
And this Abby has been quite a range of scores. Yeah.
So we've got 10, 8.5, 7, and 4?
4.
4.5. Oh, no. 4.5. No, it was a 4. No, sorry, it was a 4. 4.5 was the race.
The race got 4.5.
Yeah.
Abby is taking no prisoners this weekend.
Abby is not in a good mood today.
I love it. It's brilliant.
And that is the end of the National Anthem review. Okay, so it's time to talk about the race, and I don't think there is any other place to start rather than the track limits. Guys, 1,200 instances of track limits needed to be investigating. Is this something that's sustainable? How did this happen? What do we need to do about it?
I feel like Abby should carry on her rant-a-thon. Do you want to start off?
Yeah. It shouldn't happen. A few of the drivers did get penalties during the race, but I think it was more 5-second time penalties. And then to have, like, loads actually not being reviewed and penalties being handed out, you can definitely see why Aston Martin wanted to appeal, because this, it can't happen. And I think at turn 9 and 10, throughout the entirety of the race, you had other drivers going, he's gone off. Like Lando Norris, for example, when he was behind Hamilton, kept saying, Hamilton's gone off, he's gone off again. They're having to report on each other because they weren't getting picks up any other way. And then having more penalties added after the race, changing the complete order of finish, I think Sainz, Hamilton and Gasly were the ones that moved down. It's not right. Having a gravel trap or sausage curbs or something around those corners would help prevent it. But just having a runoff area where, like, there's not really a deterrent to not going wide because it's just a penalty, but if you can create a gap, then it doesn't have an impact. But something needs to happen because it ruins the whole race and makes some shambles of it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think they rightly got rid of the sausage curbs. I think we can all agree that those were not the right way to go, considering the serious injuries that have been produced for drivers by them. But yeah, it's totally unsustainable, this method. The biggest problem was the backlog and the fact that, you know, officially it's three warnings, then you get the black and white flag, then you start getting penalties. And drivers had already amassed enough for the penalties before they got the first warning, which just negates the point of a warning. And they can't tell. Like, and I've seen a lot of people online saying, oh, you know, they're the best drivers in the world. And in fact, a member of our team saying, you know, on iRacing, we have to keep it within the lines. Like, they can't see. Like, we've established.
That's like me comparing having to look after my cat to James having to look after his kids.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
Mate, cat's got a nightmare. I took mine to the vets today. It was very hard work.
A case in point.
But yeah, it's totally different. And we've established they can't see the edges of the car. And we're talking millimeters here. We're watching back slow-mo replays and being like, oh, did he go out? Oh, probably just about. But of course they can't. They're pushing to the limit. And we see them clip the barriers in Monaco as well, in terms of people saying, oh, why don't they just put, you know, they do it when the barriers are there, so why can't they do it when the line's there? They didn't know. Yeah, Lewis got a 5-second penalty during the race and then a 10-second penalty after it. All five of his instances were between, I think, like 3:08 and 3:14. They happened in the case of like five laps. And he didn't hear about the first one until he'd already done all of them and he hadn't even been warned for the first one yet. I think Hulk got one after being out of the race. Is that right?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. He'd retired and then it went, Hulkenberg, black and white flag. I was like, but he's not even in the race. Like, and I'm pretty sure Albon said it took them at least 20 laps or something for them to then start noticing that they were going off.
Albon, I saw the interview with Alex. He said that he got the warning and was like, okay, I'll take it easy next time. And then he got another warning and he was like, oh man, I'm not going to even use the curbs. And then he got the black and white flag. And he's like, what's happening? But obviously it's 16 laps later.
Well, according to the commentary, he was on a bit of a warpath with his engineer because they didn't tell him in time. He didn't know that he was racking up these warnings. I mean, there's a few things to consider here, right? First of all, I maintain that it has to be consistent across the calendar. It has to be the white line or an alternative to that. It has to be the same at every corner. That makes sense to me, right? That's logical. I'm an all or nothing person. You know, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. That works for me. But I think the issue is that it's kind of starting to sully, with Austria in particular, one of the best circuits on the calendar, in my view. It's getting silly. And Katie Fairman tweeted a very, very interesting point. Those 1,200 instances averages 16.9 a lap across the field, across the race.
Yeah.
That is almost the entire field going out of bounds at least once a lap. And Abby, you're absolutely right. And James, they're going 200 miles an hour. It's so difficult for the drivers to know exactly. It's razor-thin margins. But this is all still done by sight. We have the technology. Yeah. We have sensors. There are things you can do to police this. And again, on the policing thing, I hate the kind of driver being, oh, well, you know, I so-and-so did this, blah, blah, blah. But I get why they do it, right? They feel like they have to. And also, you're in a very intense competition. You're going to do whatever you need to do to get a helping hand. Fair enough.
It's the equivalent of a dive in football. It's just drawing the referee's attention to it.
It's drawing the referee's attention. What it reminds me a little bit of is that kind of, you know, you're on a train in the UK and they're like, if you see something suspicious, report it, you know, see it, say it, sorted. Or you could fund services properly so that people don't have to tattletale and, you know, go all Orwellian on other citizens. Do you see what I mean? Like, it's that kind of...
I disagree with what James just said, though, and where you said it's a bit like a dive in football. For Hamilton, for example, right, he was getting all of these warnings, one after the other. He's going, Perez is in front of me. Well, this was in qualifying, wasn't it? But Perez is in front of me, and he's going off. Why is no one looking at it?
No, that was in the race.
Was it in the race?
Was in the race, yeah.
Yeah. But to be fair, if you're being told, right, it would annoy me. And I think it was a little bit unfair for the F1 feed to just zone in on Lewis, right? Because it made him sound a lot worse than it probably was. Everyone was saying it up.
Everyone was doing it.
Admittedly, he was on one. He was being Mr. Guampy yesterday. I did say beforehand that I would call him that in that way. I think you're absolutely right, Ollie, that they were zeroing in on Lewis. But he was giving interesting, you know, he was having a bit of an argument with Toto. I understand from a broadcasting perspective why they did that.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. It creates engagement, doesn't it? It gets people talking about it online.
It gets people creating their own podcasts. and so the other thing I wanted to say about track limits is, and I saw Sam Cooper at Planet F1 and Tomo F1 having a conversation about what they could put in to stop this happening in the final sector at Austria, obviously gravel trap being the recommendation from the FIA or F1, one of the two, to prevent this. I think it was the FIA. And they said, we should have a moat. And I thought that would be a great idea. just a moat. Like, really kind of critical, you know. If you're like
Mario Kart,
your car's becoming a boat.
Boat in moat.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. Gravel traps. Do we know why they brought that? Why they got rid of them? Because there was one there previously. Now, yeah. People used to speak about MotoGP and say it was due to that, but apparently that's not true. Apparently, they prefer gravel traps because it slows them down better than tarmac.
And also to that, James, right? And I had this conversation with my brother-in-law last night. Think of the cost to put on that F1 race, right? If they wanted a gravel trap there, they could put it there and then remove it for the next event, right? It's not difficult.
In the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't count for turn four. There's a gravel trap there and it works. You know, when guys are getting feisty and fighty in that corner, often it costs people first career podiums. You know, we've seen races ruined at turn four because of the gravel trap, and that's how it should be. So yeah, I think it's something that the Red Bull Ring needs to address. I don't think this is... I think the FIA and F1, yes, it was messy, and it leaves a sour taste in the mouth. There needs to be stuff that they can do, but first and foremost, there needs to be track changes, and that's out of the purview of both F1 and the FIA.
Now, I do need to defend the FIA here because there is an article from Autosport which clearly says that the FIA asked for there to be a gravel trap there after the last Grand Prix. It was the circuit that rejected it. So, we're all, it's the FIA's fault, you know, they should have thought of this. They did, but for whatever reason, a contractual reason, they weren't able to actually have it. But it's ridiculous. It really is.
Do we think that they signed on the dotted line for a 7-year extension a little too soon, maybe?
Mm.
I mean, that's controversial because it is a fan favourite race. It's a great atmosphere by all accounts. And it generally is a pretty good circuit. But those changes kind of, they could make a difference between a good race and a controversial one.
Well, they did. They ruined the race. As James said, he went to sleep on Sunday evening not knowing what the result was. Well, he thought he knew what the result was, but we all woke up today to not know. But let's talk a little bit about the race. So let's talk about Verstappen at the start. Who wants to talk about the little fight that happened, what they thought about it? Could anyone have mounted a challenge to Max Verstappen? Let's start with that.
No.
Okay, I'm moving on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that says everything, doesn't it? He's in a class of his own, a class of one. He's so dominant. That car is so strong. And they deserve it. They deserve to be that dominant. They've put together the best package by far. And Max Verstappen is driving in, a class of his own. No one can touch him at the moment.
Do either of you three, right? This is how I've started to look at it, right? It's we know Max is going to win. So it's almost forget about that part. And just watch the rest of the race unfolding. It's almost just he goes off and it's all about second and down and lower now.
Yeah, it is. And that's, you know, if you follow Formula 1.5 on various social medias, then that's obviously been a thing that people have looked to in the past to kind of create more entertainment. But the fact is, it's just not as exciting. Like, who gets second? I don't really care. I'm going to watch and I'm going to be like, oh, that's exciting. Oh, is he going to get a podium? That's nice. But it just doesn't get your heart rate pumping, does it?
No. I think you're fair in that. If it was a rare or unusual podium, a Nico Hülkenberg, say, someone like that, that you can easily get invested into the podium fight. But when it's, you know, is it going to be Carlos Sainz or Sergio Perez on the last step of the podium? It's less kind of interesting. It feels less critical. But that said, I do think a lot of the racing further down the order has been pretty good this year. And we saw that this weekend in the race. We had some brilliant battles. Do you remember last year when there was that kind of 5-car battle for a few corners with Magnussen and I think one of the Alfa Romeos and it was in there? The guys did their best to recreate that as well. We had that as points. There was some really good battles. And I mentioned the Perez-Sainz battle. That was a really good battle. For a good 4 or 5 laps, they were going at each other. And credit to Carlos Sainz, he's come under a lot of criticism this year for maybe not being racy enough, but he really, really put it on the line there against a far superior car.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the highlights of the race, because you've got two drivers who have been under pressure. Abby, I want to know your thoughts. You know, you've got Perez, who shouldn't be back there, right? And he's under fire. And you've got Carlos Sainz, who people are saying, you know, isn't up to par. And it was time for them to get their elbows out, right, and show I do deserve to be here. And they did it brilliantly. I mean, it was fantastic.
It definitely was. And for Sainz, obviously, he doesn't know where he's racing after this contract, but he has said that he wants to be with Ferrari. He wants to win with Ferrari. And I feel like that really shone through this weekend, because he was aggressive in his racing. He was going all for it. He wasn't like being tentative and holding back. And even at one point, I think when Leclerc was in front of him, but 2 seconds off of Verstappen, Sainz was like, "That I think I have more pace. Can I go ahead?" And Ferrari said no. But he was trying everything to do the best that he can. And it was really good to see. And with Perez, as we said earlier, like, he is in the best car. Qualifying where he did should not have happened. It was good seeing him fight through the field, but it was one of the highlights was watching him fight Sainz, because it wasn't just an easy overtake. It was a good battle.
And one thing we always talk about is Ferrari's strategy. Would you like a three-stop? I found that quite comical myself. No. But in the grand scheme of things, Ferrari had quite a good race. James, do you think that there's good things happening at Ferrari, or do you think they just sort of lucked out with a good car yesterday?
It was definitely better. But yeah, it's very hard to say. We can see, like, it's so track dependent. Between the, you know, the rest of the big four behind Red Bull, it just... Yeah, it ebbs and flows. You know, everyone thought Mercedes was on the up in the last two or three Grand Prix, and then they fell back down to probably being the fourth best car. So it's very track dependent. We'll see, yeah, from Silverstone. Obviously, they've made some upgrades and it looks promising. And yeah, they're still not close enough to Red Bull, but hopefully it's going to, I think, continue to change between those three teams, who's going to be best of the rest.
I'm not as sold, and for the reasons you mentioned, Ollie, about the kind of the, oh, would you like a three stopper? Why are you asking that question? You then have both, you bring both drivers in who are behind Verstappen in the virtual safety car period. Exactly. Then they're not learning, but they got lucky because the car was good this weekend. They come unstuck when the car isn't good, and so that masked it. And Carlos Sainz was right to be annoyed, because at the very least, split your strategy. You know, try something different. And was that the difference between a P3 and a P4 for Carlos Sainz? It could well be at the end of the day. And that's annoying for him, because a podium this year is a good result for them. And I don't think he's had one this season. So, yeah.
Also, with the tyres, later on in the race, they told Leclerc, extend the stint on these tyres. And then immediately they were like, oh no, come in, box, we need to change the tyres. So they changed their mind really quickly. But I just want to say, having Leclerc out in the lead for, it was only a couple of laps, but he still led some of the race. That was a highlight, because then it meant Max hadn't led every lap since Miami.
Exactly.
That was the first time a driver other than Max Verstappen had led a lap in my son's life.
James's son is going to university next year. I also enjoyed that, because it gave us a chance to see some of the progression that Max has made as well as a driver. And it was pointed out by Anthony Davidson on the Sky broadcast. He was holding back into turn three so that he would then get DRS on the straight down to turn four. It was very, very smart driving, and it shows a lot of progression, because when he was fighting Leclerc in the early part of the 2022 season, he was at a disadvantage strategy, you know, racecraft wise to Leclerc, and moves were taking longer than they should do. And yeah, so I think that is, again, he's starting to, because the pressure isn't on and he's got the mental and physical space to be learning whilst winning, he's starting to kind of add these various components to his weaponry. And if we do get a Hamilton versus Verstappen title fight again, I think it could be a very different prospect, because I think Hamilton edged it for me in 2021 in terms of racecraft, in terms of how wily he was and clever and just a complete package. I think it's not going to be the same case next time.
Only Verstappen can break first in a corner and still get the move done, right? It was magical to watch. It was like, yeah, he slowed down so that he gets the DRS, but he still made the move. And one person who it took particularly long time to figure this one out was Perez, right? And how many times did he not figure out that? You would have thought that his race engineer was saying it. Max, this is how you get the... Perez, this is how you get the move done. We should touch on Lando Norris quickly. So he did have the new McLaren car this weekend, but he had a bad start to the race. But Lando, do you think he's coming into his own now? Okay, it's not fair to compare him to Piastri this weekend, but Lando was enjoyable to watch yesterday.
He's always been very good in Austria. Got his first podium there. I think he got another podium there, didn't he? But he combined with what looks like a promising upgrade and a track that suits McLaren. Yeah, it was nice to see him mixing it in amongst where he deserves to be on the grid, I think.
Yeah, it makes me hopeful that the McLaren package can be salvaged this season. And on even footing at Silverstone, I'm intrigued to see what Piastri can do with the car.
And Abby, Mercedes, anything to comment before we wrap up?
Wasn't their weekend. Lewis was a bit all over the place in terms of his mentality. He wasn't the Lewis that we've seen previously. And Russell had quite a quiet race. I feel like he wasn't mentioned a lot. Well, he wasn't mentioned at all for track limits. But yeah, hopefully they can bring it back for Silverstone for Hamilton and Russell's home race and give them an extra boost.
So it was Max Verstappen that won with the fastest lap. Charles Leclerc taking second. Sergio Perez third. Lando Norris fourth. Followed by Fernando Alonso, Carlos Sainz, George Russell, Lewis Hamilton in eighth, Lance Stroll ninth, and Pierre Gasly in tenth.
That's just reminding me. So Max coming in for the fastest lap at the end and, you know, going full Max. So I love the fact that they took that off Checo as well, the point. Like, just brutal. Not even like, oh yeah, let's justify it because we're nicking it off Ferrari or Mercedes now. Sorry, Checo. You're on your own.
I felt like it was Max. Can you imagine? Wasn't it Max who made that decision on his own? It wasn't the team.
Well, yeah, he convinced them. They said, we didn't think it's worth it. And then he was like, come on, mate. And then GP went, oh, all right then. Yeah. But so he came in for that. Imagine if after the race, he'd been one of those who had got a 5-second penalty and that had cost him the win.
I think he still would have won the race by 0.2 seconds.
Okay, but yeah, or 10-second penalty. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but they didn't know that
out of the realms of possibility. Yeah, that would have been in terms of our talking about what could have happened with these like post-race penalties.
But this is why it's important to know that in real time, because at the start of the final lap, Leclerc was a couple of seconds behind Verstappen. And obviously at that point, when races run, so you ease off, you just bring the car home. Why go full tilt and accidentally put the car in the gravel trap at turn four when, you know, you're going to get second place? But had he known that there's a chance that he could get track limits, he would have kept within 5 seconds, surely.
Yeah, I've got to be honest with you, Sam. I was thinking exactly the same thing when I was watching it. I was like, Leclerc, just keep up with him. Because Max didn't seem to have one violation throughout the whole race, not that was spoken about. But he is that perfect, of course. Let's move on to our drivers of the day. James?
Lando Norris. And I believe that is the correct answer. So good luck, everyone else.
Yep, James has won. Abby?
I'm going to go with George Russell.
I knew it. I knew she was going to do it. You're a meme.
Oh, God.
Because, well, if we include the sprint as well, he was the first driver to brave it onto slicks on the Saturday after the wet. And in the race, he was one of only two that didn't get track limits. He kept it clean. He was well behaved. And, yeah, As James took Lando, Russell is my answer.
I was going to go Zhou Guanyu for the same reason, so I'm going to pivot away from that. I'm going to go with Charles Leclerc.
That's
right, Sergio Perez.
There's someone left now.
Sergio Perez is still wide open for you there, Ollie.
No, mate. No. We started this show, I'm sticking with it, so I'll have to find
someone
else.
Actually, you know what? No, you can have Charles Leclerc. I'm going Carlos Sainz. I thought his defence of third position was pretty strong, pretty robust, and the main reason is he looks much renewed and improved this weekend. He had the measure of Charles at various points, and yeah, he just looks like he's kind of reinvigorated slightly. And you know, next weekend is the scene of his first career win, so it's a good time to find form.
Okay, and that leaves Charles Leclerc. He started in second, he finished in second.
So you've mentioned like seven or eight names there and no one has even said Max. And you're like, oh, we're out of options. I know he's got the best car, but he did win by like, well, 20-odd seconds and then decided to...
Like I said, do we watch Formula One now without Max in it? It's sort of that mentality, right?
Poor Max.
Oh, yeah, cry him a river. Jesus Christ.
Oh, poor Max on his private jet on the way home.
Yeah, I bet he's really cut up. He doesn't get mentioned on the Cuts to the Race podcast.
Yeah. Well, we got mentioned on his documentary, but let's not go into that. Okay, Abby, would you like to do the championship standings, please?
Yes. So with the constructors, Red Bull, no surprise, in the lead still. Mercedes are in second. Aston Martin, third. Only 3 points behind. Ferrari are in fourth, Alpine fifth, McLaren sixth, Haas are seventh, Alfa Romeo are eighth, Williams are ninth, and AlphaTauri are 10th.
And for the drivers, I believe we still have two yet to score a point.
We do, and they are Sargeant and De Vries. But Max is in the lead, and the number of points he has is actually higher than Mercedes in total, so he would be second in constructors if you added him to that list.
Oh, man.
Second is Perez, Alonso is third, Hamilton fourth, Sainz fifth, Leclerc is in sixth, Russell in seventh on equal points with Leclerc, Stroll is in eighth, Ocon in ninth, and Lando Norris rounds out the top 10.
Okay, so that was the Austrian Grand Prix. Next up is the British Grand Prix. Now, we have a special announcement. I'm going to let Sam say it. What's special about the British Grand Prix this year?
Well, I mean, I would have been there anyway, to be fair, with F2 and F3. So that's not the special bit. But for the first time in Formula Nerd's history, we are F1 accredited.
Woo! So
we have reached the landmarks that we need, the numbers, the viewership. And yeah, so we have, as home media, F1 accreditation for the British Grand Prix. So that is very exciting. And I'm very much looking forward to it. It's going to be a great experience. And I'm hoping that, it can be the first of many races to come for us.
So, Sam, you're going to be there all weekend in the paddock. So, because we'll be at the British Grand Prix next week, the podcast will be on Monday, but you will have Sam, who would have been there all weekend. He'll have so many stories to tell. It will be a good one. So join us for that. And I'd like to thank my panel. James, lovely to have you back. Are you going to come back again? Or is this just a special
I'll do
appearance?
My best. I'll do my best. I'll have to see how it goes, but yeah.
Okay.
It's been great being back.
Bring Leo with you as well. We can have a fifth panel member. Abby, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a good one.
And Sam, thank you, sir.
Thank you as well. Well hosted, as always.
And we'll be back next time. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.